spoke a little bit about the obligation that a husband has towards his wife when signing to the conditions of a ksuba. And we mentioned that it was a discussion in the Gemara, as well as in the Rishonim, as to whether this is an obligation that is binding midaraisa. Does the Torah expect a husband to pay all this money and to take these responsibilities upon himself? Or is it something that only came along midarabanan? Many of the Rishonim assume that this is only a rabbinically imposed obligation, that a husband has to provide for his wife all the numerous obligations that we spoke about yesterday. And in exchange, the wife also gives back to her husband certain amounts of money and certain things that she brings into the marriage as well. Because the Chachamim wanted to make sure that a woman has some sort of comfort and has some sort of stability in her life, and to make sure that she's going to be taken care of, therefore the Gemara says in Maseches Ksubas and in Baba Kama and the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch quote this lahalacha, that Isha that doesn't have a ksuba, for whatever reason, if a woman's ksuba gets lost or something happens to it or we cannot locate it, she is asura to be with her husband. We assume that a woman is not allowed to be with her husband if she doesn't have a ksuba. Why? Because then the husband will have nothing holding him back from divorcing her. And we want to always make sure that a husband has something in his way, that he can't just get up flippantly one day and decide to divorce his wife. We want to make sure that there's something in place that will stop him, that will make him consider, that will make him think about it carefully before making such a decision. And therefore, says the Gemara, and this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that if a person doesn't have a ksuba, they have to go ahead immediately and get a ksuba made up in order for them to remain together. And therefore, we had many, many cases right after Hurricane Sandy. Many people's ksubas were ruined. I remember when I was in the White Shul, we were spending many, many nights in a row writing what we call a ksuba de irkasa, somebody's ksuba who got lost or damaged. You have to write a new one, and that was something that was very important. But it comes up every so often, even without a hurricane, even without a storm. Sometimes people just lose sight of where the ksuba is. Nobody knows exactly what happened to it, and a new one needs to be written. In the ksuba, my father always points out, he says to Chassanim, and he tells me all the time, unfortunately, when you're in the rabbinate, you hear about the way couples sometimes treat each other, and it's not as respectful as it should be. So my father always points out whenever I say, doesn't the husband know what he signed onto on the ksuba? It says, Va'ana oker ve'ezon ve'afarnis. It means I take upon myself to make sure that I will provide my wife with all the things that she needs. But one of the words that we say is va'oker, means that I will show her respect. Va'oker means in Aramaic that we will show respect to our wives. And that's what the Gemara says in Maseches Yevamos, that a husband has an obligation to respect his wife more than he respects himself. He has to give her the benefit of the doubt, says the Gemara, whenever there's a discrepancy. For example, a woman grew up in a wealthy family, he grew up in a very simple family. Says the Gemara, Ola imo ve'eni yoredes imo. Al pi halacha, the assumption is, he has an obligation to provide for her on her standard, and he cannot take her down to his standard. Maybe that's going to be difficult for him to do, but that's really what he signs up to when he gets married. But that's the word when we say va'okir, means not only will I take care of her financially, but I will also show her dignity and respect. And that is the basic obligation of a husband. So there was a major discussion in the days of the Rishonim, how far does a husband's obligation actually go? We mentioned yesterday that a husband takes upon himself that he's going to pay for her mizonos, he's going to pay for all of her food, and he's going to pay for all of her clothing, which sometimes can be very expensive, because clothing includes not only the clothing and the shoes, but it includes all of the necessities that a woman needs throughout her life, whatever she's going to need in a home in order to live a normal life. So this can be a lot of money on top of what the obligation that the Chachamim impose on a person as well as a husband. This can end up being a tremendous amount of money. And the Rishonim have a discussion in Maseches Ksubas, what is this obligation of a husband? He takes it upon himself that he's going to take care of her, but what if the husband doesn't have money? What if now they're married, and now he just cannot provide? The wife wants to have all these kinds of things in her life, and he just says, I don't have it. So Rabbeinu Eliyahu, one of the Balei Atosa, says, Chayav Adam Lahaskir Atzmo. Too bad, you signed up that you were going to provide her with it, and therefore it means, if you have to get a new job, if you have to get a new profession, it doesn't matter. You obligated yourself, and therefore you have to do whatever it takes to be able to give her all that you promised her you would give. And Rabbeinu Tam disagrees, and Rabbeinu Tam says, I don't think that's correct. It's true that a husband has promised his wife that he's going to give her as much as he can, but if he doesn't have a job that provides that for him, if he has a simple job, and he's giving all of that money equally to him and to her and to all the children, then that's the best he can do. And we don't have a right to force him to go out and get a job in order to be able to pay for the obligation that he has taken upon himself. This is a machlokas that boils down to a disagreement between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch writes that the halacha would be that a husband, since he took upon himself this obligation of Iksuba, the Shulchan Aruch writes, it means that he has to even hire himself out and get a new job. Whatever it takes, he has to make sure that he's able to provide his wife with whatever it is that he promised. And the Ramah says that this really doesn't seem... I'm sorry, the Shulchan Aruch says he does not have an obligation, and the Ramah disagrees, and he says, you have to go as far as hiring yourself out, doing whatever it is, in order to make sure that you provide for everything that you promised you would bring into the marriage. Now, the problem with that is, some point out, that the Shulchan Aruch discusses the following case. What if I take a loan from someone, and somebody is kind enough to lend me money, and now it turns out I don't have any money? So, can that person come and force me to get a job? Let's say I'm sitting around unemployed, and I'm fully capable of having a job. Can that person come and force me to go and get a job because I owe him money? So the Shulchan Aruch discusses this case, and the Shulchan Aruch writes that it seems when you're involved in a halva, when you lend someone money, and that person now does not have the money to pay you back, they don't have it readily available, but you have the ability to make them force themselves to get a job, which is something that might make them uncomfortable, says the Shulchan Aruch, you don't have a right to force somebody to do that. And the Rush discusses this in a tshuva, which is where the Shulchan Aruch comes from. The Rush says, Mashatoin Shimon Sheyasa Ruven Ito Malacha Kedela Farachovo. I lend someone money, that person doesn't have the money to pay me back. So I say, come wash dishes in my home. Come pay off your loan. Do something that you'll be able to pay back the money that I lent you. So the Rush says, there was somebody who came to him and asked this question, does he have a right to force the other party to come and work for him in order that he should be able to work off the money that he owes? And he says, Ein bezdin kofen osa lokach. You cannot force a person who borrowed money from you, even though it's clear, everyone agrees that they owe the money, you cannot force that person to go and get a job or to work for you either. Shelo amro Torah ela v'ha'ish asher ata noshebo yotzi elecha es ha'avot. Avalo yishalchu abezdin yad begufo lachofo lehishtabed v'lefrachovo. Says the Rush. You have a right to go and take a collateral. You have a right to take something in order to force him to try to pay it up over time. But to actually take him physically and make him get a job or make him come and work for you, that, says the Rush, is something that is highly inappropriate, and he says, you do not have a right to do that. Now the Rush says, why should that be different than the case that we find here when it comes to a husband promising his wife? After all, there's a major discussion in the Rishonim. Does a husband have the right to sit back and do nothing? He promised his wife that he's going to pay her ksuba, but now he doesn't have a job, and he's not interested in getting a job. He's fully capable, but he says, why should I work so hard? Too bad if I don't have the money, so she won't have it. So this is a discussion, as we mentioned in the Rishonim, says the Rush. Doesn't that seem to be a contradiction? When it comes to a halva, we'd say that you can't force a person to go get a job. When it comes to getting married, the Ramah says, that you're able to force the husband to go and get a job in order to sustain the lifestyle that his wife wants him to live up to. So this is a question, and the answer that the Achronim say is because when it comes to Iksuba, we assume the nature obligation of the obligation that he took upon himself is far more obligating than the nature of an obligation than one who borrows money from someone else. So although it's true that when one borrows money, you cannot force the borrower to go and get a job in order to pay it back, however, when it comes to Iksuba, the Chachamim wanted that the husband should take his obligation seriously, and they wanted to make sure that his wife will be totally taken care of, and therefore it goes to say that even if he doesn't have money to provide for and he doesn't have a job, he has an obligation to go so far as to do so. That is the psak of the Ramah, and that is something that should show how serious Iksuba needs to be taken. There is a discussion, there are many, many differences between the wedding ceremony of Ashkenazim and the wedding ceremony that you find sometimes by Sfardim. Not all Sfardim communities are the same, but there are many Sfardim communities that have a minhag that to us Ashkenazim would seem a little bit unusual, and that is, although on the bottom of the Iksuba usually you have two lines where you have one 8 sign and then another 8 signs underneath, by the Sfardim, there are those who have the practice that they have the chassan sign his name on the bottom as well. And the question is, what is that all about? How come they have somebody sign on the bottom and we don't? So the answer to that is that the early Achronim say that today, we don't really need the chassan to sign on the bottom of the ksuba, because today we know every text of a ksuba is exactly the same. We don't specialize ksubas and write different information for different things. Everybody has the same standard unified ksuba all over the world, and therefore we assume that a chassan knows what he's getting into. He doesn't even have to sign it. He doesn't have to read it, because he knows that he's signing up to the same kind of agreement that every other chassan that came before him signed up to as well. Says the Ma'arivayil, in the times of Chazal, when every chassan and kali used to actually work out the details and say exactly what it is that they're bringing into the marriage and exactly what they expect from the other side, so then maybe you need the chassan to make sure that he signs it in order that he should be able to say with certainty that I know what I'm signing up to. But today he says, when everybody has the same uniform text of Iksuba, there's no reason for us to go ahead and have the chassan sign. Now, where does it come from that the Svardim, some Svardim communities still do that? So the story goes as follows. The Beis Yosef quotes in the name of the Rashba a fascinating story. Al Am Ha'aretz Shaba Legarish Esishto. There was a man who came to divorce his wife, and he was not a learned person at all. The Amar Le HaBezdin, and as the Bezdin was going through the procedure of the divorce, they told him, Sheyifra Lok Subasa. They told him, you now have an obligation, now that you're divorcing your wife, you have an obligation to pay her whatever amount of money that you signed up to in the Ksuba. The Amar, and writes the Rashba, he says back, he says, when somebody was standing under my chuppah and reading the ksuba, I didn't know what they were reading. I thought that was one of the brachos. I didn't know I was signing up to that. I didn't know what I was agreeing to. And therefore, I have no obligation at all to pay for whatever it says in that document. So that's a very smart husband. But the Rashba says he had this problem and he didn't know what to do. And the Rashba says, Shalu es pi harav Rabbeinu Meir. They asked Rabbeinu Meir veheshiv, and he said, D'shomen lo. You're right. A chassan has a right to say, I had no idea what it said in there. I didn't know what the ksuba document actually means. I had no idea what I was obligating myself to. And therefore, the chassan has a right to say, at the time of the divorce, I'm not obligated to pay my wife anything because I didn't know what the terms and conditions of the deal actually were. And the Rashba says, De'ein shomen lo. Of course we can't listen to such a person. What do you mean? If you are asked to be an aide at a chasana, that means you are expected to make sure that the chasana understands what it is that you're signing to. You can't just sign a document and obligate someone else to do something, writes the Rashba. It goes without saying that any normal person who would sign the document knows that they first have to speak it over with the person that they're signing on behalf of. And therefore, writes the Rashba, we cannot believe a person who wakes up now at the time of a divorce and says, well, I don't want to pay because I didn't know what it entailed, I didn't know what the deal was, says the Rashba, we don't believe you. You don't have a right to say that at this point, and it's too late. However, he says, Aval ma ese, shekvar hora zaken v'yosha v'yeshiva. What am I supposed to do? Rabbeinu Meir disagreed with me. He said that a chassan has a right to say and claim that he doesn't know what the terms of the agreement were, and therefore he can wiggle his way out of the obligation. Says the Rashba, it doesn't make sense to me, but I don't really know what to do because Rabbeinu Meir put forth an argument before me and I'm not ready to disagree with him. So, obviously Rabbeinu Meir only said this when you have our traditional ksuba, when you have two edim signing on the bottom, and the question is, well, did I know what you were signing to? I didn't sign. What would be the case if I signed myself, if the chassan himself signed? Well, then there's no excuses. Then there's no way to ever get out of such an agreement, because in such a case, the Shulchan Aruch writes in a number of contexts that if a person has something where they have their own signature on the bottom of it, even if it makes no sense at all, if you signed it and we can ascertain that you were the one who actually was present and you put your signature onto it, then you have an obligation to pay. So much so, the Shulchan Aruch says a case in Choshen Mishpat. What if a person signs onto a document, and he says, Chayav ani lach mana b'shtar. He's quoting a case from the Gemara. Person just signs a check. It says, I'm going to give you $5,000. Doesn't say for any reason. In the memo, it doesn't say because I bought something. It doesn't say because I had some service from you. Just says a $5,000 check with my signature on the bottom of it. And everybody knows that that's my signature. It's not forged at all. Says the Shulchan Aruch, even if both I and the second party agree that there's no reason why I had to pay this money, both of us agree that I didn't owe it to you, and there really was no reason in the world why I should have given it to you, says the Shulchan Aruch, you have to pay it anyway. Why? Because once you sign your name on the bottom, that means that you are obligating yourself to pay, because your signature is your signature, and it's too bad. And in fact, the Ramban, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Ramban, that if a person even has a shtar, if you have some sort of document that's written in a foreign language, I don't speak Japanese, I have no idea what the language means, but the Ramban says you have a Japanese document, and on the bottom of it has my signature. And it says that you're going to pay millions of dollars for something, and it turns out I have no idea what it means, I don't understand what the terms of the agreement are, and I come later on and I say, it's a shtar in Japanese, how can you obligate me to pay? Says the Ramban, of course you have to pay, because we assume that you never would have signed such a thing unless you knew and you had somebody who told you exactly what it was that you were signing to. People don't just sign their names to things. And that's why the practice in the Kehilas Sfarad is that they have the chasen sign. This way, nobody can ever turn around later and say, I didn't know what it was, I didn't understand the terms of the agreement. Nobody can have such an excuse. Once you sign your name, as outlandish as the conditions might be, as exorbitant an amount of money as might show up in there, you have an obligation to pay it regardless. But in Minhagei Ashkenaz, we do not find such a practice, because the Shulchan Aruch writes that we assume that any time an aide, any time a witness signs on behalf of a person who is obligating him or herself, both the chasen and kala obligate themselves by signing the ksuba, whenever we do such a thing, the simple assumption is, that the aidim have to make sure that the person who they're signing on behalf of obviously understands the terms and conditions of the deal. And therefore, says the Shulchan Aruch, no husband is believed today to say, I didn't know what it was that I was signing up to, and therefore I'm not obligated to pay because I never really wanted all of this, and people just forced me into it, and they made them sign without my agreement at all. That is not a claim that a person can have, and therefore, based on that psak, it would seem that this is why our practice has developed, that a chassan no longer has to sign on the dotted lines, because it's good enough if you have other people who are signing on his behalf. We assume that they explained it to him, and they know very clearly what it is that he obligated himself to.